Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, listeners. This is Patty Black. I am back bringing the good news show to you. This morning's show is going to have an interesting twist. We will have Rebecca Stanton-Reinstein. She's the president of Advantage Leadership, and she has authored two books. One is Conventional Wisdom, How Today's Leaders Plan, Perform, and Progress Like the U.S. Founding Fathers. The second is Success Planning, a How-To Guide for Strategic Planning. It's going to be very interesting, so we'll have Rebecca on in just a couple of minutes. After that, we will have Neutral Guard. Neutral Guard will be presenting the cell phone chip. The cell phone chip is a little chip that you put on your cell phone, and it protects you in many different ways. So that's going to be after the interview with Rebecca. So I want to welcome you to the show this early Monday morning, and it is July 20th, 2009. We're going to have a lot of fun, so stay tuned. First, I want to bring in my co-host, Sherry. Sherry, are you with us?
I am. Good morning, Patty. Good morning, everybody. Very happy to have you with us. This is going to be a very interesting show this morning, one that I'm really interested in hearing Rebecca, and we all want to know a little bit more about what she's got to say and some very interesting tips. So as soon as we have her on, I'm ready for her.
Okay, let's see. I think we can bring her in. Good morning. Welcome to the Good News Show.
Are you there with us?
Good morning.
Try that again. Good morning. Rebecca, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm right here.
There you are. Great. Welcome to the Good News Show.
Thank you for being with us this morning, Rebecca. As I was telling everybody, there's some very interesting things that we're going to hear about that we're at this time in the economic situation that everybody is talking about. It's going to be very interesting to hear your take on all this and on the interesting things that you're talking about. So with that,
why don't we start with having you introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit about what you do.
Okay. Well, my name, as you mentioned, is Dr. Rebecca Stanton-Reinstein. I am the president of Advantage Leadership. We help companies put together their strategic plans and, more importantly, actually execute them so they get some results. And then we help develop their leadership and their managers and actually help get every single employee engaged in making that mission into reality. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean, like, when you say that you want the George Washington leadership secret? How what is that?
Well, in researching my book, my newest book, Conventional Wisdom, I wanted to weave together two stories. The story of the framers of the U.S. Constitution, which of course included George Washington, and those of modern executives. Because what I discovered is that both groups, the framers or the founding fathers and modern executives, use a lot of the exact same techniques, approaches, and methodologies for putting together their plans, making things happen, and doing what we call strategic leadership. And so during the research, I spent a lot of time focusing on people like George Washington and actually how he got done what he got done, because we tend to kind of think of him, maybe the way we learned about him in school, is kind of this, old guy up on a pedestal someplace. And when you put people up on a pedestal like that, it's kind of hard to then relate to them and learn from them. So I said, well, what was the real George Washington like? What were some of the things he did that made him such a recognized leader? And so I incorporated those things into the book, and then I did the same with some of the modern executives. I interviewed 20 modern CEOs and executives and looked at the ways in which they did things. And in both cases, the most successful of them were like Washington in that they had a vision, but they were certainly more than visionaries because they knew how to make that vision happen on the ground. They knew how to inspire people, to encourage people, to put together plans and actually follow them up, to be demanding of people, to ask for accountability and get it. So all of those things wrapped together are part of that leadership secret that we revealed.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's, you know, there's, I'm noticing a lot of things like that happening within my environment, actually, about, you know, going in to have somebody come in and change things around within the corporate or whatever the your workplace, and like upheaval everything and then change things around. So what do you mean when you talk about accomplishing the impossible?
Well, that's where I talk about the Madison factor. And James Madison, who's sometimes called the father of the Constitution, was really critical in many ways in getting that to happen. And, for example, the country at the time that the Constitution was written in 1787 was basically falling apart. And if you were to read the headlines then and now, you wouldn't see much difference. There was a huge economic crisis, high inflation, high foreclosures, lots of violence spouting up here and there, lots of stuff going on that's very similar to today, and essentially the country was falling apart because the governing Articles of Confederation didn't allow for the country to be governed. All the power lay with the states, and they were kind of warring with one another. So it was a few years after the Revolution, things were about to go under. And, of course, Britain, France, Spain were just kind of hovering like vultures around roadkill, just kind of waiting to gobble us up. So Madison and a few other guys got together and engineered the calling of the convention. And they had to do some really pretty good political wheeling and dealing to get it to happen. Once they got there, Madison came in with a draft of an outline for a constitution that they kind of used as their agenda as they put the new constitution together. And then he did what any good legislative politician would do, which is what he was. He worked the floor. He worked behind the scenes. He got the people to compromise. He got them to sit down and say, okay, what can we put in here that's actually going to work for us? Then when the Constitution was written, he goes back into the Virginia legislature because each state had to ratify the Constitution, and he pulls off his magic again. This time he had to go up against his strongest foe, Patrick Henry, who of course we all know from Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, but Madison beat Henry and got the Constitution through. Then he went into the national, the new Congress, and he became Washington's point man in Congress to get Washington's legislative agenda through. So at every single point, he was the kind of can-do, go-to person, and every organization needs that. That's what that Madison factor is, because you can't accomplish the impossible without them, without those folks who will take on the tough jobs, the impossible jobs, and just simply doggedly move after them and make them happen. And those are all lessons for today. When I was talking to our modern CEOs that I interviewed with, one of the things I looked at was who was their Madison factor, who was their go-to person. And we describe how some of those guys do exactly the same thing today to make that company more successful, to get things to change, and not by hard-fisted tactics, but by getting people engaged, getting people wanting to really do their best.
Huh. So that's some
interesting
topic there, because it's something that we normally, you know, we wouldn't really be thinking about how to do it in that way. And so I'm really glad to hear your version of it. What do you mean about the adapting the strategic Fortune 500. What is that about?
Well, one of the things that I did is some of the people I interviewed were from, of course, big, famous companies. One was Ryder System, the guys you see their trucks every place delivering things, the CEO there I talked with. The CEO at Spirit Airlines, the former CEO at Southwest Airlines, Darden Restaurants, which provides us with places like Olive Garden and Red Lobster and so forth, and many more. But as I talked to them, I said, okay, how do you guys get things to happen? And they followed very much the same pattern that the framers had followed. First of all, putting together a plan, and then going out and making sure that that plan happened. And part of what they did, and you alluded to it a little before, is that they really realized they had to change the culture in their organizations. Because the culture in any organization, this is true whether it's a small little nonprofit or a giant global company, has a culture, just like a country has a culture. And if you don't make some changes to that, then no matter what kind of plans you put together, they're not going to happen. Because the culture is designed to make things happen the way they are happening. So if you want change and different results, you've got to change the culture. In other words, you've got to give people an incentive to do a good job. One of the most interesting people I talked to in that nature was a man who's now the Secretary for Health and Hospitals in the state of Louisiana. And when I interviewed him, he was the CEO at Broward Health, which is a big health, public health, publicly funded health establishment in Broward County in Florida, and number of hospitals and so forth. And when he came there, he wanted to see that customer satisfaction was going to be one of the number one factors they looked at. And when he looked at the incentive system for all of the managers, he found that the incentive system wasn't paying them for doing that. It was paying them for something else. So he changed the incentive system. In other words, what people were going to be evaluated on and people were going to get paid for and rewarded for was for high patient satisfaction. Well, guess what? It went way up because the culture changed so that patient satisfaction, patient care, became the number one factor in everybody's mind. Whether it was that attendant in the ER or the person delivering the meal up on the floor or the manager of some whole hospital or whole section. So that becomes and that's a key. So if you're trying to do things differently in your organization, no matter how big or small that is, you've got to look at, well, what's the reward system? What are people really rewarded for? Not what we say we're rewarding them for, but where does it really come down? And because people figure that out, no matter what you say, and you have to change that system, that culture, so that people are rewarded for the most important things.
Hmm. Wow. So much great information.
I'm sorry, I didn't
You're
mean
blowing
to.
Blowing my mind. Oh, my God. So when you say improve the bottom line, that's I like that.
Well, at the end of the day, and this is true, again, for nonprofits as well as for profit-making companies and even government organizations, although a nonprofit, by definition, isn't, quote, supposed to make a profit, they are supposed to be profitable in the sense that whatever money they bring in, if they bring in more than they spend, then that extra money, instead of going to shareholders as in a corporation, goes back into building the organization. And so, in fact, nonprofits, even more than for-profit companies, have to be run in a business-like way because you're dealing with the fact that the funding, wherever it's coming from, is always going to be limited. You're dealing often with a lot of volunteers. You're dealing with people who are trying to do something important within the community. And in all these cases, you want to make sure that you're even more efficient and more effective at what you do than anybody else, because you don't have any money to spare. So you have to watch your bottom line, that difference between what's coming in and what's going out, and generating additional funding so that you can expand your program, serve even more people. And that's true whether you're doing Meals on Wheels or a reading program or a program to help elderly or whatever that nonprofit emphasis is. Your goal is to serve more and more of that community that you're devoted to. Mm-hmm. So I think that today, in today's world, that's harder and harder. So you also have to look not only at the bottom line, but at the top line. In other words, generating more revenue, looking for new sources of revenue, looking for new sources and expanding. And the people who are going to survive in this kind of economic climate we're in are the ones that are out there being entrepreneurial, taking risks. In other words, doing exactly what the most successful companies have done and exactly what the framers of the Constitution did. You have to be out there looking for that new opportunity. And I heard this from CEO after CEO, and that we got five of them together to do a seminar a couple of months ago. And people were asking that question. They said, okay, in these economic times, what do we do? And it's innovate, innovate, innovate.
So Rebecca, you yourself have your own success story where you've authored some books. How did you get involved in writing?
Well, you know, that's an interesting story. When I was a kid, I wrote a lot and so forth, but decided to take a more practical bent when I went to college and all of that sort of thing. But I've always enjoyed writing and so forth, and I've written a lot of materials, booklets and all of that sort of thing for my clients over the years and for training and so forth. And I had written a couple of e-books, again, based on training materials. And about, back in 2001, right after 9/11, I kind of went into a deep depression. And it was fairly severe and lasted for quite a while. And so I went to a counselor and was getting some help. And in addition to being a psychologist, she was also an artist. And she suggested to me that one of the ways I might help relieve some of this depression was to start exploring that, that right brain creative stuff. And writing for me seemed to be the way to do it. And I started pulling together a lot of the materials that I had gathered and used with my clients over the years on strategic planning. And that's when I wrote the Success Planning book, the Guide for Strategic Planning. And in the process of doing that, in the guidebook, I had to make it more, well, let's face it, kind of dry and boring. It really had to be about, here's how you go about planning, here are the steps, and so forth. But I had a lot of stories in my head from all of my clients that I'd worked with, people I'd heard about, and so forth. And I always wanted to kind of do that second book on that had all of the anecdotal information, what real clients were doing in the real world. And so once the other book was finished, and I published it in 2003, I started kind of working on this idea and trying to figure out, well, then what would be my theme? What would tie it all together? And since I am a history buff and I love history, and I was reading a book at the time about the Constitutional Convention, and I said, well, wait a minute. What those guys were doing at the convention was really strategic planning. And it kind of all fell into place, and that's when I started looking at the two streams. What were the founders doing, and what are modern executives doing? And I went out, as I said, and set up a bunch of interviews with strategic leaders around the country. And I kind of tried to weave those two stories together. So the writing and the creativity and all that good right brain excitement kind of helped pull me out of that mental state that I was in, and has really unleashed a lot of creativity. I'm working on the third book now. So
that was my next question. And that's rather quickly, because you've just, if I understand it correctly, you've recently released your second book.
Yes, it came out in February. We had our official launch in March, and but I've started gathering the materials, and I've kind of got a theme for the second one. And again, I'm busy running my business, so I won't be sitting down and just writing it straight off. So it may be quite a few years before I'm back on your program telling you about my latest book. But it is a project that has at least started.
So do organizations call you in to coach or to counsel them on their business? Do you work on an independent level with them?
Yes. So one of the things that I do with them is that I work on kind of maybe two levels. One is when we go in and we work with the entire, whoever the leader is, the CEO, president, or whatever, and the leadership team. And there we work with them, help them go through the steps they need to put together their strategic plan. And then sometimes some companies just have us help them put the plan together. What we really enjoy much more and feel more gratification from is when then I go in and me and or my team, depending on how big the organization is, and we stay with them for about a year, helping them implement it, getting all the departments, all the employees really actively engaged in carrying out the plan, so that when we walk away, not only do they have some good results, but they own it. It's theirs. It's got their special imprint on it. It doesn't look like what we brought in. It looks like their own planning process, and that's why it's going to survive and be good for them. And then we also usually end up doing some one-on-one coaching with the leader and sometimes some of the other executives or managers in the company, again, helping them figure out where they want to go and then figuring out how to get there. So we do both the coaching and the consulting.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know that when corporations do create a strategy or have a plan and they need to follow through with it, that sometimes long-term employees may be relieved of their position, or, you know, I think there's like a fine line of helping the corporation and keeping the ethical part of what you're doing to your employees. How do you feel about that?
Well, I have pretty strong feelings about that, because what I always argue is that if we want to get more efficient, right, more productive, here's how we go about doing it, and we usually involve the actual employees in doing that. And let's say that we now get so efficient that a job that was done by three people, it could now be done by two. Well, what I always counsel the company to do is not to chop off that extra head. In fact, what you've got is an incredibly knowledgeable person that you can now put to better use, because they're not being tied down to this other process that wasn't very efficient. They can now do something else. In other words, you can expand your capacity. And because at the end of the day, and despite what you see in the headlines of companies doing, you cannot cut your way to success. You can't lay off 1,000 or 10,000 employees and still expect to get the same thing done, or expect to grow, or expect to do anything except maybe survive in the immediate time frame. Mm-hmm. But you need people, and you need the people that have been with you the longest and know the most to be there and use that knowledge productively. So I'm always arguing for increasing your capacity as opposed to just, you know, lopping off heads.
Right.
Cutting
your
way through.
Again, I like that approach.
And I've seen that other approach all too often. You know, I had a long corporate career myself, so not only did I see heads roll, my own rolled a couple of times when they were in economic trouble. And
I've seen it. And they let go of the people who have been there for years who have the knowledge.
That's right.
And hire younger, fresh out of college people and pay them less.
That's right. Pay them less for less knowledge, less work. So,
right. And expect the company to grow and benefit from that. Thank you for answering that. That's an issue, and a lot of people experience the negative part of that, and it's really interesting to hear your approach to it, because that makes you unique from other entities that engage in coaching and helping corporations grow.
Yeah, in fact, that's a point I make very, very clearly with them, and I'm pretty adamant about, because although I said, if you just want somebody to come in and help you, you know, set up the guillotine in the public square and chop off some heads, it ain't me. Find somebody
great.
Else.
That's great.
That's not what I do.
Well, I'd like for you, we're running out of time, so I'd like for you to once again tell our listeners the titles of your books and also give them your contact information so they know how they can get their hands on it and order it.
Sure. The book is Conventional Wisdom, How Today's Leaders Plan, Perform, and Progress Like the Founding Fathers. It's available at Amazon, obviously, and also on my website. You can go to AdvantageLeadership.com, and there you'll find all my contact information, email, phone, and so forth. So it's AdvantageLeadership.com, and it's Rebecca Staten Reinstein.
Wonderful. We've really enjoyed having you on our show. I want to thank you for being here with us this morning.
Oh, well, thank you. I enjoyed it myself. It was great fun talking to you and hopefully to your audience.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of good information that we heard. I personally will be calling you for a little personal conversation about some things that are going on that I'd love to talk to you about. So you'll probably hear from me sometime today.
Terrific, terrific.
Or whenever we can talk. So I thank you for being on here and to shedding a little light on what your interpretation of strategic planning is and how to get ahead.
Right.
You know, how to put people on a mission and get out of the way and get into their own success mode. So
thank you
so much. And maybe you could just tell our listeners your website one more time.
It's AdvantageLeadership.com.
AdvantageLeadership.com. Okay, thank you, Rebecca. Congratulations on completing your second book and being on your way to your third book. And we will have you back on the show when you're doing something fascinating and when your third book is being released, too.
Great. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there's a lot of good information. It sounds like both of her books would really help people who are involved in business or corporations or just entrepreneurs. So, and it's everybody needs to make a living and needs to know how to grow their way of making a living. So that's really good information, good valuable information. So our next guest is going to introduce you to the cell phone chip. And I think that all of our listeners can benefit from this and can share the information with their friends, their loved ones, and even people they don't know, because it's something that is available. Everybody's using a cell phone, and everybody's being surrounded by the rays of radiation. And I just think this next cell phone chip is going to help a lot of people with their health.
Yeah, I know somebody that is now not even going to use their cell phone anymore because they are so freaked out from the radiation that comes through it. And so I know that they'll be very interested in hearing about this. So
somebody we're telling about the cell phone chip.
Yeah.
Please introduce yourself and tell us the name of your product.
Hello, we are NeutralGuard.com. That's NeutralGuard. The Cell Phone Chip Store, BioPro Technology Independent Consultants. Our featured product is a cell phone chip that you install to your cell phone.
And what exactly does the cell phone chip do?
The cell phone chip is a scientifically proven, patented technology that helps neutralize the harmful effects of radiation, which scientific research shows is emitted from all cell phones.
How does the cell phone chip benefit people?
Several independent scientific research studies have been conducted studying the impact of cell phone radiation on the human body. These scientific studies have been published reporting that cell phone radiation can lead to health problems ranging from headaches to the more serious health issues of brain cancers. Here is some data source from the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences. Radiation is classified as group 2B carcinogens under the standards established by the World Health Organization's Agency for Cancer Research. The chemicals DDT and lead are also group 2B carcinogens. Our cell phone chip contains an advanced technology called molecular resonance effect technology, or MRET, which has been scientifically proven to help neutralize the effects of harmful radiation. Our technologies have been tested in leading medical centers, universities, and laboratories around the world, such as Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, University of Washington, Columbia University, and University of Toronto, Canada, to name just a few. This innovative technology is now available to everyone in a chip that you install to your cell phone.
And is it easy to use?
The cell phone chip is very easy to use. It's shipped to you with a sturdy adhesive backing that you install yourself to the back of your cell phone. The scientifically proven, patented technology begins to work immediately as you use your cell phone.
How was the cell phone chip developed?
The following information is from the book Molecular Resonance Effect Technology, The Dynamic Effects on Human Physiology by Dr. Howard Fisher and Dr. Igor Smirnov. In 1986, the inventor of MRET, Dr. Igor Smirnov, was part of the investigative team that was looking into the disaster at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. Rooted from his research into the Chernobyl disaster and after researching the effects of radiation on cellular structures at St. Petersburg University in Russia, Dr. Smirnov developed his breakthrough system called molecular resonance effect technology. There have been many experiments conducted that have demonstrated the ability of the MRET shield chip to provide protection to human tissue. The U.S. patent for the MRET radiation shielding material was issued to Dr. Smirnov in 2002, and since then the product has been recognized worldwide. Quote, the MRET shield device counts amongst the major scientific breakthroughs of the century.
How can our listeners find you to ask you questions or order the chip?
To learn more about the subject of cell phone radiation and this exciting new cell phone chip technology, you may visit NeutralGuard.com, that's NeutralGuard, or contact us by phone at 954-249-6600. For our Spanish-speaking customers, you may contact us at 305-393-6969. Business opportunities available. Again, our website is NeutralGuard.com. That's NeutralGuard. Guard yourself and your loved ones.
Well, when you go to the website, NeutralGuard.com, you can learn about many things. You can learn about the chip and how it works. You will learn reasons behind why their chip is unique. You will learn if you are in a harmful situation, is cell phone radiation harmful? Is your loved life affected? Are your children affected? There's so much about this that you do need to go to the website to read and learn more about it and order the chip. So I want to thank you, NeutralGuard, for being with us. Sherry, we're tying the show up. Do you have anything that you'd like to say before we go?
I just want to say that you know, at this point, there are so many great things that we need to stay grateful for that I just want to remind you, place gratefulness every day in your life. think about the things that, the little things that you're grateful for. And when you have a grateful heart, there is no room for fear, uncertainty, and just want to end with that. So, yes, I'm very excited about the cell phone chip. I am definitely getting one myself, and I highly recommend that you learn a little bit more about that and go to the website and order yours also. So you all have a great, great week.
Thank you, listeners, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week, next Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.